Hey, this is Rob Ansbach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes. For those keeping count, this is episode 377, and my next guest, we haven't seen since episode 232, 2.5 years ago, where we talked about his book, Rice and Beans Millionaire. So I want to welcome back Brian Eisenberg. We're going to talk about his new book. We're going to talk about less funnels, more stories. And people that know me know that everything I do is about storytelling. I mean, 60 plus books, you'd think I'd run out of stories, but nope, plenty of stories left.
Even the shirt you're wearing is a story.
You got to marvel at this shirt, right? No, I love superheroes. That's, you know, the whole premise of this show, eHeroes, entrepreneurial heroes. But everybody has their origin story. And yep. There's a lot of people out there that are afraid to share it.
100%.
And I just made a post the other day, a video, about why people are afraid to share their jobs before they became entrepreneurs. Whether you worked for Burger King or McDonald's or Domino's, you know, my first job, now I was an entrepreneur before my first job. I mowed lawns, but my very first job was I bagged groceries at a local grocery store, and we had to wear ties. We had to dress up. We had to be respectful. You go into any grocery store now and the kids are wearing ripped pants, no ties, whatever they're wearing, earbuds in, they can't listen to anything. And you gotta swipe your own groceries now. So it's a lot of things have changed. But those early jobs taught me discipline, taught me customer service, you know, taught me a lot of the things that the foundation that I needed to be an entrepreneur.
Well, it's funny you say that. I was asked on a recent podcast, the No Hacks podcast. And this is a guy who's been in the conversion optimization space a long time. And he asked me probably one of the best questions I've ever had on a podcast, which is he asked me what all my previous careers and my CRO experience, what was the one skill that kind of was the red thread through them all? Mm-hmm. And it took me a bit to think about it, but you know, I was a teacher when I was in college. I taught in private schools. I was a social worker before that. So I've always had this passion about understanding why people do the things they do. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, you know, marketing consulting and CRO and all that for all these years and author. And I said, the number one thing that ties them all together is empathy. I'm always trying to understand what other people are thinking, feeling, why they do the things they do. And it's funny because, you know, you are wearing a superhero shirt. And I always like to remind, it's a chapter in I Think I Swallow an Elephant as well. You know, I talk about, you know, every superhero, we get to their origin story. And that's one of, by the way, 16 story types that I found are consistent for selling, mm-hmm. which we can talk about later. But origin story is the one, like it's the most popular one. It's the one that you can see in more brands over and over and over and over again. And by the way, this is a sidetrack, but there's only one brand I've been able to discover, and I'll ask you later because we can talk about all 16 later. I won't share them on air, but there's only one brand I've noticed that has used all 16 in their lifetime, which by the way is Nike. Disney comes close. Disney comes close. There are about 12 to 14 of them, depending on how loose you want to interpret it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this empathy is such a powerful thing to understand. Why is that person in front of your website? Why are they walking into your store? Why are they calling you on the phone? If you can't walk into, you know, and we learned it years ago, right? If you can't step into their shoes, How the heck are you going to sell to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's COVID changed things. You know, it did. It made customer service worse.
Correct.
And, you know, those that embraced customer service won all the customers back. The ones who didn't, like I say, you know, go to the grocery stores now and you have to scan all your groceries. To me, that's awful. you know, I'm not getting, I can't use their break room. I can't get a discount. I can't, you know, join their 401k program, but now I'm an employee scanning groceries.
Yep. And paying extra for it.
You got someone, you know, at the end of the aisle with earbuds on, you know, hoping that they don't have to work or you don't mess up. And a lot of times I just stand there, press buttons and act confused because I don't want to scan my own groceries. And then they get frustrated that they have to come over and help, you know, a guy who should know his way around a computer.
You think a little bit.
And so, you know, it's maybe the younger generation accepts it. But we're in this phase where we still have, I still have older parents. They're in their 80s. I think that we are this last generation that bridges the gap between technology and customer service. You know, and it gets annoying sometimes.
I'm not going to completely disagree with you. I think it's because the bar is so low, and that unfortunately most, because I look at it through my kids' eyes in a lot of ways, and they're not as loyal to brands right. as we were. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. And COVID definitely was one of those things, right? Those human to human connections definitely did change. But what I am finding is that, you know, they can appreciate when the environment, the experience feels different than anywhere else, mm-hmm. right? That they're getting results that are different than everywhere else. If it's just average, and look, you and I have been talking about this for years, right? If you're not remarkable, you're ignorable.
Right.
It's just that simple. And I think what's happening is, in a world where, again, when you and I grew up, the average person would hear maybe, I don't know, 500 marketing messages a day. In 2005, 2007, when social media started getting popular, that number climbed up to 5,000 messages today a day. And today, with scroll, right, and shorts and reels and TikTok, that number's climbing to over 15,000 messages a day. So, yeah, what are you doing to stand out between all that slop?
We talk about slop. AI has made it even worse. And, it, you know, I love AI as a tool, the tool that it should be.
Correct.
There's a lot of people that use AI as their lottery ticket. You know, they're trying to sell more courses, and they don't even know how to sell anything, but AI has now created them a course. Or they're using it as, you know, their justification. Hey, I can help you do everything. Dude, you haven't helped me do anything since. You know, but now AI is going to help. No, it's AI. And I always tell people, look, I've been using AI for 30 years. And they're like, what? It's only been around for a couple of years. Look, Anspach Intelligence. And they're mm-hmm. like, oh, come on. So it's, you know, I've written books about AI. I've, you know, utilized AI to do a lot of great stuff, to decode websites, to fix websites, to figure out yep. what's wrong with them. But the majority of people out there are using AI just to write blog posts.
As we've learned in every other field in the world, the tool is just the tool, but the talent behind the tool is what matters.
Mm-hmm. It's like taking a wrench. You don't know how to use the wrench, but you don't have a hammer. So now you're going to use the wrench and pound something. You know, but there's critics out there every day. AI is going to take our jobs. Okay, did you see that when the computer came on board, or Photoshop, or the iPhone?
Or the car when the horse and buggies were still around, right? Or you know, the pen and paper to the word processor, to the AI. But this brings us actually kind of like full circle, because I look at it as, what can't AI generate? AI can generate fake stories.
Mm-hmm.
It could do that. But that origin story, that story behind how you really got started, those human things, those are hard to fake. That spark that comes from a real person. And, you know, we mentioned before recording, my good friend, Dr. Matt Delgado, right? He's a chiropractor here in Austin, Texas. He's considered one of the best chiropractors, you know, in town, possibly in the country with the kind of impact that he's having on patients. And he's not doing chiropractic like most people do. Most people think of chiropractic as, you know, I've got a pain. They're going to go push on that pain, snap, crack, or pop it. And they do a surface level touch on what, you know, on the issue that's facing. He actually goes straight to the brain. He's got a more of a complex method. He also works on the extremities and the ligaments. But he's using that to tell the brain everything is safe. But the question is, why? Why did he even get there? Well, he had an autoimmune disease in his 20s. He had just finished chiropractic school. He was getting his first job out of chiropractic school. He was working in a clinic, burnt himself out completely. He literally couldn't get off the bed. He had Graves' disease. They were ready to basically cut out his thyroid and put him on medication for the rest of his life. Okay, literally, as we say, he had one foot in the grave. And he healed himself because he said, look, the human body is not like a car. We're a lot more like a plant. That if you had a plant that was, you know, in the corner there that wasn't doing well, what would you do? You'd take it out of the corner and you put it in front of sunlight and give it some water and it would heal. Well, our bodies are kind of the same. We just got to tell the brain it's safe, because today, back to those messages, we're so overwhelmed, so overworked, so much noise, and then the toxins, all the crap that people eat, that our bodies are overstimulated, overworked. And if we don't get the nervous system back to where it's regulated and being able to think clearly, yeah, all this slop is just getting in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just like mental and physical, you know, the noise and the slop that we see on social media, you know, on the internet, can have damaging effects too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then there's a lot of false information. There's a lot of people who get triggered. There's, you know, you post something and you might alienate half your audience. You know, social media was supposed to bring us together, hence the word social.
Correct.
What it's doing is tearing us apart.
Now, you know, I don't want to totally poop on it. Like, you know, here are two old men kind of do. I've developed some amazing friendships throughout the globe because of social media, right? I'm not going to say, you know, there isn't value in it, but it's a tool. It's how you use it, right? It's a hyper interactive tool to develop relationships, not to bombard yourself with tons of, you know, fake imagery and fake stories. Like, that's not doing you any good. But can you connect with people who are like-minded, who are really interesting? Like, yeah, that stuff is amazing for. Like, I mean, I met Dr. Matt through Instagram, mm-hmm. right? He just wanted to find interesting people in town. And, you know, he found me and we connected and we went to a AAA baseball game here in town together for the first time. And, he adjusted my son for the first time in the parking lot, like 10 o'clock at night after the game. And we've been friends ever since. Again, social media has its real value, but we took that relationship way off of Instagram and have had many meals, many experiences together. That's where the value ultimately comes into. But we were able to combine our interests because it got sparked because of our social media presences. Well, that's what it's great for.
Let's talk about your book. You know, I think I swallowed an elephant. You know, it's probably a little different than your, your Rice and Beans Millionaire book. And, you know, a lot of my books are different too, different style, different, even some of the writing's different, because it has to be. It's geared to somebody different. You know, with my Disney book, it's geared to entrepreneurs, but also Disney nerds. You know, with my Rob Versus series, it's all sarcasm.
Yep. You know, sarcastic? Come on.
But, you know, everyone is geared to a different audience. You know, with your I Think I Swallowed an Elephant, it's you're sharing more stories, more not to say it's not as valuable as the first one, it's just different.
Yep. Yeah, I've written 11 books now. Our biggest selling book was Waiting for Your Cat to Bark, Persuading Customers When They Ignore Marketing. That was a little over 20 years ago. And a lot of people call that book 9 books in 1. It was so dense. It predicted a lot of what was going to go on and we see happening now. Mm-hmm. But it was complex thoughts. This book was written for a couple of reasons. Number one, last July, I had a shocking health revelation. So in the last 5 years since COVID, things have been a little bit challenging. My brother has dealt with a number of health scares, and then very serious health scares. And then in July, I got some blood work and I noticed my blood sugar was in the 300s, high 300s. Okay. And here I was walking 9,400 steps a day, eating plant-based, eating minimally processed food. I thought I was doing everything okay. Yeah, the weight kind of came on and I was a little sluggish and I needed naps during the day, but I just thought that was just part of my aging. And it was when I finally went for this blood work where the practitioner said, I can get you on like Mounjaro right away. And I'm like, nope. I said, give me 3 weeks because I don't want to be on medication. That it was the story in my head. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not going to be on medication. I don't want to be, you know, I love my brother, but I don't want to be on medication the rest of my life like he's had to be. Like, that's not who I am. And I said, okay, let me go see what I can do. I don't know why I picked 3 weeks, but I gave 3 weeks. 3 weeks, I cut the sugar in half. Still high, but now approaching normal levels. Then she gave me a continuous glucose monitor. Within 4 months, I completely reversed every symptom I had. So my vision got clearer. My clarity, my brain clarity, I had no more brain fog. I was able to think morning to night. I started becoming, you know, creative again. I started feeling like I needed to write. I needed to communicate. I was becoming more social again. Aches and pains were gone. Swelling in my legs were gone. Just so many things. And I realized, okay. And as one of my friends says, you know, this book is a combination. If you think, you know, Eisenberg's meet Seth Godin meets James Clear for a dinner party. Mm-hmm. And I made myself a very significant point about writing this book, which is we had a good friend of ours who we helped with his home services business take it from a $25 million business to a $60 plus million business. Uh-huh. And he always said to us, guys, you know, you're brilliant. I said, I love your stuff. I said, but you need to learn how to speak, and I'm going to use his words, dumbass. Okay. So I'm just a guy from the Texas border. I said, this, you know, you're just too smart for me. And so I made myself a constraint when I wrote this book that not one chapter would get over 400 words. Every chapter is between 250 and 400 words. And it's 30 plus years of thinking, of understanding, of transformation about, first of all, the story that you tell yourself, how important it is. Because I lost 100 pounds in my 30s. Mm-hmm. I completely transformed my life. And that story was about keeping up with my kids. My middle one was starting to play baseball. My youngest one was on the way. And I was like, I can't keep up with them with 277 pounds of bulk. Mm-hmm. But you know what happens with kids? They grow up. They didn't need me to keep up with them anymore. And so that story wasn't working. And I knew it wasn't working. I was struggling. I know, like, now I can think about it now. I know how much I was struggling. And I tried to come up with a story, but I couldn't. But that blood test, man, did that put a story in me real fast. And by changing that story, I was like, okay, I can do the discipline. I can focus more on eating my proteins. I can focus in on what Dr. Matt and I call AQ. Right, you probably have a high AQ business. You know what? You know why you have a high AQ business?
No, why?
Because we sit on our ass a lot all day long. Okay.
Yeah, and I feel it sometimes.
Right, and that's why we get aches and pains, and the blood sugar kind of just spikes. And so, one of the biggest things for me was I get up now after every meal. I go for a 10 to 15 minute walk, but usually longer if I can. But even if I can't, it's at least 10 minutes, and I'm walking throughout the day as opposed to, I did my morning walk, and now I'm sitting until the evening to walk again. Like, that was it. And I munch and munch throughout the day. And of course, my sugar was through the roof. But it was clarifying and getting a clearer story that ultimately makes the habit stick. Because it's what I loved about, you know, BJ Fogg's Tiny Habits and James Clear Atomic Habits. When you start thinking about all these things, it's like, these habits are great, but they don't stick until you have that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. And it's the same with a funnel, right? A funnel will get people through it, but if they don't have a good enough story to want to stick through the funnel, through the friction of the steps that your business makes it go, they're not going to care to.
Yeah, and they overcomplicate their funnels, or they Frankenstein their funnels. And so you're going through this process and you're going, oh my God, do I have to fill in more crap and do this and do – and by the time you're all said and done, you've abandoned that crap. Now they're sending you emails and this and that. And you know, at first it became a welcome opportunity. You want to try something new, and then you're thinking – you know, now they're just an unwelcome pest. I don't want to deal with them anymore.
Exactly.
And so, you know, less funnels, more stories. And it's the stories that drive the people that come to you. But now what? Now you're going to throw them through a funnel and beat the crap out of them? And no, it's you can't do that.
So that comes into what's funny is the second most impactful story type that sells. Okay, because you and I both have a belief about how terrible traditional funnels are. Okay, and it's the belief stories, right? So take your origin story. Now, what do you believe? What do you believe that's so different than everybody else in the world? And so, again, real simple for Dr. Matt. Yes, you know what, doctor, you know, most chiropractors like to think, oh, I can just move this disc, I can crack this thing, I can, you know, move your neck. That's a mechanical approach to a living being.
Mm-hmm.
His philosophy is very simple. We're more like a plant than a human. And it was the belief statements on his wall. So he read, Be Like Amazon. I think I swallowed an Be Like Amazon, Even Lemonade Stand Can Do It. And in there, we have a chapter that talks about Simon Sinek's Start With Why, where in his chapter, he really talks about the word belief more times than anything else. And so we actually walk people through an exercise. And so Dr. Matt took the book, did the exercise. And in his lobby, he has these things of we believe. And he said, you know, we believe in listening to the body and the body can heal itself. And like, that's when I got that blood test back, I latched onto that belief that the body could heal itself. I just have to give it the right opportunity. And it did, right? I had a bunion, like my whole left foot, the toe was completely bent. One day I'm laying in bed and all of a sudden I'm looking at it and I'm like, is it straight? Is it possible? And it literally straightened back up. I got rid of all the inflammation of my body and the toe just naturally got back to its proper place.
Mm-hmm.
All of this pain, all of this stress is just creating inflammation in our bodies. It's the crap that we're dealing with. And it's like, yes, we can heal. I saw that miracle for myself. And I mean, yeah, it's tiny. It's a bunion. But you know what? Every step I took, I felt the pain. I always did. And I used to go to him when he's a more traditional chiropractor just to adjust it every month, month and a half, just so I didn't have as much pain. I don't have it at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's because of his beliefs. And so I always encourage people, go ahead and just start with your origin story, start with your beliefs. And I've done workshops. I just finished a State of Search example where I was speaking there. And I shared a friend of mine, Ken Goodrich, who built a $100 million HVAC company. Now, Rob, you've been around long enough. How different is any HVAC company from any other HVAC company?
They're all the same.
They're all basically doing the exact same thing. So how do you build an $100 million HVAC company? You start with a great origin story. It was branded with the fact that his logo showed him holding a flashlight, which is what he did for his dad growing up. That's on every single truck. That's on every, like, the big part of everything he does. And then his beliefs. And his beliefs are little things like he believes that every screw in an air conditioner should be super tight. And so what he did, because you and him might know if they're tight or not, because maybe you're familiar with HVAC, but the average customer isn't. And so here's the piece that most people miss. Take your belief statements and say, how can a customer witness those beliefs? How can they build that story and see it for themselves? And so all he did is he made it into a tiny red screw.
Yeah.
Where most air conditioners are, you know, gray and silver and chrome, he did a bright, shiny red screw. And now everybody knew that the technician touched it, the technician knew he touched it, the customer knew he touched it. That belief statement and his origin And he did some fun stuff with his belief statement. You can search it up. Ken Goodrich, you know, we believe, you can see the video his team talks about. $100 million company. He sold that company. He's no longer there. But the point is, two stories told exceptionally well, repeated over and over and over again in a freaking boring market, and he turned into a $100 million company. Yeah. But you don't want to tell your origin story. Yeah. Let's start there again.
Yeah. Yeah. I come across this all the time. You know, people say, well, my story is boring. Yeah, but look, okay, share it with me. And then they'll tell me, and you can see their eyes, you know, light up, and the color rushes from their face, and they're just getting excited. And I'm like, see?
They don't know how to tell it in an exciting way. And that's true. But that's when you reach out to guys like you, guys like me, who can hear their story and now frame it and wordsmith it and craft books about it. Yeah. To make them stand out and be different than everybody else out there.
Yeah, you know, and I tell everybody, I said, look, we're all walking libraries of knowledge. And that's the legacy. I mean, I wrote a book about legacy. And mm-hmm. legacy is not about, you know, how much money we're leaving behind. It's about the knowledge that we share with the next generation and the next generation after that. Multi-generational knowledge. And people, you know, and I look back at my grandfather's and my great grandfather's stories, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, they came to America with $50, and they did this, and I'm like, you know, $50 a day doesn't get you a dinner at
McDonald's,
anything, you know, I mean, for four people. So, you know, I'm thinking, how did they do this? I want to know more.
Yep.
And yet, people disqualify their stories as boring. You know, it just drives me nuts. So, yeah, but I'm glad that there are people like you, like me, like everybody else who brings out books with more stories. And I want to tell everybody, look, I've produced lots of books. Brian's written lots of books. Books, by and large, don't make us money.
Correct.
They are there to help educate our readers, and maybe those readers will reach out and say, hey, you know, I want to hire you to do speaking. I want to hire you to do consulting. I want a book like AI is a tool, you know, in the right hands, it can do great things. In the wrong hands, well, I've gotten pictures from people who have used my book to level up their chair. And I'm like, really? It happens. Not everybody's going to like your book.
They don't have to.
But, you know, get your stories out there. Share them with people. And the people that don't like the book are never going to call you anyway.
Correct. In today's world, you need to be punchy. You need to get to the point. You can't, I have a chapter in the book that says, you know, there was an old study years ago that one of my mentors told me. He said, you know, a guy would stand out in the middle of Fifth Avenue and literally hand out $100 bills. And people would still say no. Not everybody needs to like you. You're not even a gold bar. Like, nope, nobody's going to be like, nope, too much of a hassle.
There was a video where a guy was handing out gold bars or chocolate bars. And everybody was taking the chocolate bars because they didn't believe the gold bar was real.
Correct. And that's okay. But the ones that do, those are the ones who you can build the legacy with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at something on your website and you mentioned McDonald's. And I mentioned McDonald's the other day in a video. And it was funny because people love to hate on McDonald's. It's not healthy, it's this and that.
Yeah.
And you know, but when I'm hungry and it's a quick bite and I don't want to go anywhere, McDonald's is the comfort. It's the thing I go to because I know that no matter which McDonald's I go to, it's consistency.
Yeah.
Well, it tries to be consistent. You know, and people will complain, well, it makes me sick. Why do you go? Because I'm familiar with their menu. And so, you know,
don't forget the role that clean bathrooms played in their success in the early days too. So let's not forget about that.
Right. And the thing is that if you look at the Ray Kroc story, you know, people love that story. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was on, what was it, Netflix or Prime, yep. One of those. You wanted to root for him, but the way he took over McDonald's, you're like, what a jerk.
Well, same with Sam Walton.
Yeah.
Right? Sam Walton had a phenomenal story. But now you think about Walmart and you're like, really? The way they treat their employees and stuff like that? But he was a real pioneer in thinking about, you know, about retail. You know, I use this example coming back to the beliefs. Sam Walton in his book had his 10 beliefs, like his 10 commandments of what, you know, of what retail should be. You should always be, you know, your associates should be partners and stuff like that. Well, there's one that they broke. You know, blaze your own path was one of his. Well, they stopped doing that a long time ago, right? They let Amazon do all that. And it's like, no wonder Jeff Bezos was able to, you know, disrupt Walmart, because when you break away from your internal beliefs, and that no AI can help you with, okay, when you are clear with your beliefs, it's very easy to keep following that North Star and be successful. And when you bring in professional management and they don't believe it, that's where you start seeing so much of this, you know, large scale destruction.
You know, really. And you know, Amazon is ingrained in our society now. And there's people, you know, they'll say, boycott Amazon and go local. Look, the local people don't have what I need.
Not all the time.
I have to go to Amazon to get it. You know, and I get it. You know, they did some shady shit to start with, you know, but here's the thing is that Sears, Kmart, all these other companies couldn't get people to come into their shops anymore.
Yep.
And it's not about price. I always tell people, it's Amazon might have deals, but they're not always the best deals.
You could. It's get about time.
Yeah, it's convenience. What they're offering. Well,
you know, I think it's convenience, but it's the time convenience, and this is what we're seeing with AI too. And this is the part where I think most businesses are really going to lose out. What Amazon does is, you know, that even if it's not the cheapest, it's among the cheapest. Mm-hmm. If you go there looking for a particular product, they're going to have a larger selection than almost everybody else. Even specialty stores, they're just going to have a lot more because that's their business model. If there's a problem, they're going to take care of it. And you know what? They're going to get it to you faster than just about everyone else. Yeah. That's their four promises. That's what our book, Be Like Amazon, was written about, those four pillars. Those are never going to change. That's what their brand is built on. It's wonderful.
You know, but now, I wish that in a world went to Amazon, there was a pop-up that asked me exactly what I was looking for. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like years ago, you would walk into Radio Shack.
Yep.
And they'll say, well, what are you looking for? Well, I have this component and I need to hook up this and to that. And they would know exactly how to do it. You go to Amazon and you have no idea. If you're trying to look for something to MacGyver something, you can't get it.
100%. Well, but that's where the AI is playing now. And this is where I think businesses need to focus on really understanding. You know, both of us come from a good, you know, SEO search background. Like we spent a lot of years in it. And we understand that, you know, the advantage of the internet was that I can now search through options. I can look through, you know, open up 10 tabs, look at 30 blue links, open up the ones I want to, and then make decisions. In today's world, where we're so overwhelmed, we're getting so many more messages, we don't have the time. The AI is a cognitive shortcut, because all they're doing is saying, oh, here's two options. You want 3 to 5? Okay, I'll give you 3 to 5. But they're not going to give you endless scroll.
Right.
They're going to help make that decision for you. And if you haven't figured out how to influence that data set for that question that customers are asking, you're going to be forgotten, because AIs don't rank, they remember.
Yeah.
And your job is to make yourself memorable.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not telling people to go out there and write blogs about what you do. But the thing is, it does help. And what I've done is I created a whole series of, you know, blog posts about who I am, what I stand for, my mission, my core beliefs. You know, who is Rob Ansbach? What does he do? Mm-hmm. Where did he get his superpowers? All this stuff. Because when people are searching, whether they search on Google, whether they search on ChatGPT, it's going to start delivering that information. But, you know, we tend to focus on the SEO type of post, and that's not always what the AI is searching for or indexing.
Well, so you know what my big revelation was with AI and how it really, I started transforming how I work with clients a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my wife and I own a home care agency here in North Austin. And I messaged one of my friends who's, you know, a local SEO guru. I'm like, you know, yes, I've done it for 30 years, but I don't do the day-to-day anymore. So when I have a question, I know who to ask. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, I'm getting ready to move my office. What do I need to do to make sure I don't get my Google profile suspended? Right. And he said, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to update everything but your Google business profile. So, you know, update your website, your social media, update, you know, your listings on the Round Rock Chamber, update your listings on the Home Care Association. Everywhere you can, just start updating. I'm like, okay, I can do that. And I did that. Update, update, update. 3 weeks. And Google index still has not showing not one updated address. Why? Because Google's not investing in index the way they used to.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. I speak to my friend Dave McInnes. You may remember PRWeb. He was the founder of PRWeb. He has a new newswire called newsworthy.ai. And I said, Dave, what do you think if we run a press release talking about my relocation and expansion to a new office and that we have a new training lab in the office and all of that? He said, give it a try. Mm-hmm. Rob, within an hour, every AI, every LLM, Copilot, Gemini, ChatGPT, they all knew my new address. They knew the reason why we moved, the expansion. They knew the old address we gave because we gave that in the press release. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it filled all of that in. I'm like, huh. And then guess what? The index in a few days updated as well. Even MapQuest, which notoriously almost never updates, updated. I was like, okay. This is real interesting because it's just trying to find the right source of truth. So this press release was able to give it more correct information, a new set of truth for its data set.
Yeah.
And then it updated the index based on that data set, based on the news. I'm like, oh, okay. So I've been playing around. Do you remember Paul Allen, who founded Ancestry.com? Mm-hmm. Paul used to say, and he used to tell David this all the time, he said, look, if you're not creating news, something newsworthy, every 28 days, why do you even exist?
Right.
What kind of impact are you having to your customers, to your community, to your business?
And also, you know, not always creating content for your business, but sometimes create controversial blog articles or LinkedIn articles. I created one that was for Disney against the Comcast deal, and it went viral, and it just surprised me. And you know, thousands of people were clean, and I looked at 100-some thousand views and over 100 comments, and you know this and that. And, you know, 90% of them were rooting for Comcast and were throwing me, you know, insults.
But that's because you stood up for what you believe,
right? And I was getting massive amounts of friend requests and connections, and so right after that happened, I started a newsletter on LinkedIn called the Robism Weekly, and I threw it. I didn't know where it was going to go. I created one episode or one issue, threw it up there, and if you've ever written a newsletter on LinkedIn, you know how well it does. I didn't know. So I launched this thing. And when you launch a newsletter on LinkedIn, LinkedIn emails your whole list.
Yep.
So instantly I got 500 and some subscribers. And today launches the fourth issue, and I'm already up to close to 700 subscribers. Yeah, I don't get their email addresses. I don't get this, but I see who's following me, and 5% of the followers are Disney executives.
Lovely.
And that blows my mind.
Yep.
You know, so it's I'm creating value. There's no call to action. Every marketer said, Rob, you have to have a call to action. No, I have a newsletter. It's there to help, to educate. And I just take all my Robisms that I've ever said over the last few years as an entrepreneur, and I create an article about it.
What you're doing is this faith-based initiative that you don't have to measure it by the email address that you collect, but if you do this the right thing over the long term, and you've been doing it long enough to know that it will have a return some way.
You know, so it's, I look at things and go on, you know, how will this help me? And my normal weekly newsletter that I write through, you know, an email subscription service, nobody's signing up for email newsletters anymore, but they are signing up for social newsletters, which blows my mind. But every time I put a video out there, within an hour, it's indexed on AI. AI is picking up video. Because video, I don't know why, but video is just taking off. Videos.
It's the currency of today. Yeah.
It's what AI loves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm being shown everywhere. And so I get these comments, Rob, do you have a life? You're always everywhere on the computer. I said, look, I have all my social stuff programmed into what's called Social Bee. Maybe it looks like I'm everywhere, but I try to take as much time off as I can.
And to celebrate little ones' birthdays.
I've told the story before, but you know, when I was in France last year, everybody that I came across did their search through ChatGPT. Nobody was using Google.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, none of my kids use it anymore. I mean, it's a rare thing to use it. And in fact, coming back to the press release strategy, so my home care agency got our first lead, and it's not like we get tons of leads, right? It's most of the business is word of mouth. But I've got the first one that said, I got your contact information through ChatGPT. And I'm like, yep, this stuff is working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, the things that used to work for SEO, for now AI is just blowing things out of the water. And I get it, but it can be the new shiny object.
Yep, if used improperly, correct.
Right. And so you have people that have never created courses, who have never written books, who have never done things. Rob, I have AI now. It's my best bud. It'll protect me. And then they come back and say, Rob, I can't figure this crap out. I screwed it all up. Can you fix it? You know, here's the thing. When you put your brand in the hands of AI, you need to be able to give it everything about your business, what you've done, you know, whether you've been in business 5 weeks or 50 years.
Yep.
It needs to know who you are, what you do, your core values, everything. Otherwise, if you're not feeding it who you are, it's just guessing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I give people a quick little four prompt that they can put out there, and they can ask themselves to see what AI knows about them. So, you know, who is your brand, or what is your brand, depending on, you know, what you're looking for? It could be your personal brand. What makes them different than the competitors in this industry? Mm-hmm. What products or services do they sell? You'd be surprised how usually there's a disconnect between those two. You think it's straightforward. It's sadly not. And then I ask it the most important question. Why should someone choose them?
Mm-hmm.
And see what the AI thinks, because that's what it's been fed. And you realize how often there's a disconnect from what the AI thinks, from what you as the business owner thinks, and what your customers thinks. And if there's a disconnect, there's friction. If there's friction, you better fix it.
So how do people fix it? Where do they go to find you so that you can help them fix it?
They can search for me in AI. They'll find Brian Eisenberg. I think I'm still found in Google. Just, you know, Brian with a Y. They can go to Amazon and find a bunch of my books. I did give literally 30 years of lessons in this book, so they can do a lot of it by themselves. And now I'm doing some of this fun stuff with Newsworthy. It's one of the companies I've been advising, as well as a company called Rocketbeat, which is trying to change the way people do startups. AI is fun. Mm-hmm. It's just got to be used intelligently. Yeah. And, you know, it's one thing to be focused in on the artificial, which was part of my problem when I ballooned up all that weight. I was too much on the artificial stuff. Got to focus back on the intelligence. The human body is intelligent. The humans are intelligent. Let's tap back into that side first. Yeah. What makes us unique, what AIs can't do, is that storytelling.
Yeah. So, and I guess you have a website they can go to, brianeisenberg.com, and Brian yep. with a Y.
Correct.
Well, it was great, and I'll see everybody on the next episode. Thank you, Brian, and everybody, go find him. Go find Brian Eisenberg.
Thank you so much.